episode of the Streak and Line podcast. It's just me and Caroline tonight. Caroline, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I am fine. We are back to talk about things we haven't talked about since Thanksgiving. And
yeah.
It's the world's dumbest football game.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot to say. I can't imagine anyone listening to this really wants to hear too much about it. But, I mean, you know, an absolutely frustrating, disappointing result for so many, many reasons, or at least for one enormous reason. Not the most surprising results in that I think we both said we thought the Hoos would win, but it would be very, very, very predictable for them to blow it. And
I'll eat crow. I said they were going to win big.
Well, no, I thought they
I was way off. they could have, but there were some things that didn't go quite that way.
I thought the most likely thing to happen was that they were going to be the better team and win the game. And they only looked like the better team for a half of it. And they looked like the world's most unlucky team. For all of it, not that they lost because of luck. They lost because they let a worse team outplay them for a half. You know, I mean, there's no real excuses. It's just frustrating when, as actually a Hokie friend of mine put it, nine bullshit things had to go our, so the Hokies' way, in a row, and they did. So I don't think either side was, you know, happy. I think most Virginia Tech fans I've talked to thought they escaped via a bunch of miraculous bounces, which
yeah,
it went. But
and that's what sucks is, like, it's not even just all seven or nine of those things had to go Virginia's way for them to win. If one of those things happened,
Virginia
probably wins. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what was so brutal was, I mean, it was just, the only thing I can really, I went through the anger. I'm mostly disappointed for the players. You know what I mean? Like we talked about beforehand, like these guys go into this game with, some of those players only been there, this is their first year or their second year, but they have 14 years of bullshit on their shoulders. You know what I mean? But they go in the fumble that wasn't a fumble from the like 7 yard line, like that was going to be points. Like
should've been,
that's momentum. Yeah. That was an 80 yard mistake by the refs. So granted, like the first half was just, you can't spot any team, even one. Cause like you said, like we thought they were going to, Virginia was going to be the better team and they were going to win. They did half of those things. I think that they were the better team overall. By the end of it, you can be like, yeah, I think it's fair to say Virginia was a better team, but they didn't win. And sometimes that's how shit happens. And moral victories are way past the point in this series at this, you know, at this stage. However, to lose in overtime is better than losing 38-0, right? I ask myself as I still weep, as I want to weep on the inside.
I mean, it's an extremely frustrating, despite how predictable it was, thing to have happen. You almost wonder, conversely to what you said, like if they just went and got blown out, like almost looked like, you know, at points what was going to be the case, then we all just sort of turn the TV off and go, same old, same old. And instead, they sucker you back in by playing great in the second half and just didn't quite have enough, which is, it's just a huge miss of an opportunity. It's just,
yeah, it was just right there for the taking.
And it can't be overstated how big of a opportunity that was against your rival, against someone who you have momentum in general, like in terms of how the programs are feeling. Like we said, everything going into the game, Virginia Tech was reeling with losses in personnel, with dropping games they didn't expect to be dropping this season, and Virginia had been experiencing success. You know, there's still hope with this bowl game, which we'll talk about in just a second, but I any of the stuff we're saying about bad bounces, I hope anyone listening knows, at least from my end, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Caroline, none of this is excuse making. I mean, this was
an absolute
missed opportunity in a really, really important game for the Hoos. Maybe not one that coming into the season we really were optimistic about, but by the point that we got to the days leading up to it.
I'm definitely not team baby out with the bathwater, though. Like, there's definitely takeaways from the season that are extraordinarily positive, like finishing with a winning record, making a bowl game. I don't think it's – I understand to some extent the like, none of it matters, but that's not true. I mean, it's not. We've gone 14 years, 15 years without beating them. We're still alive. We still have a program, and it's getting better. Like, it's still there, and it's definitely trending in the right way. So I have a hard time. I feel like that crowd, if we do a Venn diagram, might overlap with the, like, I'm not watching Virginia basketball in the regular season.
Right. I was going to say that it's a huge parallel to the basketball team and their success in March. You know, does it all matter if they can't do it? To some people, no. You know, to those of us that are, I think, diehard, pretty much no matter what. Obviously, like, we're fans and are going to enjoy the games regardless and enjoy the wins as they come, and the wins are going to come for this program. I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism for it.
For sure.
It was
a tough one to – brutal. I just feel so bad for Bryce, for the fumble in overtime. Like, I feel bad for the players. I feel bad. Like, it's not even for me where it's like, oh, my bragging rights or like what. It really, honestly, like, it's taken me a really long time to get to this point. Obviously, I cheer for these teams hard and want them to win. But I've had such a changed perspective when it comes to, like, I wanted those guys to win because I wanted those players to win. I wanted them to, like, get out from under that bullshit streak that has nothing to do with any single person that's at this program right now. Yeah, you know I mean, and it's just like seeing Bryce in tears, and I've used this example before, like after Virginia lost to Virginia Tech in basketball last year, like seeing Devin Hall like at the podium and like clearly devastated. Like, I can't get mad at a college kid that they're just, I mean, at the end of the day, like, as much as I hate when people are like, just a game, don't get worked up. Like, they played a game and it just some bounces. Like, I could, that fumble into the end zone that they used to score the time. Like, I just, like, want to drag you every time I think about it, because, you know, the poor kid, like, that didn't recover it is going to, like, probably still closing his eyes and sees that ball bounce right next to him.
Anyone's putting the game on Bretton Nelson.
No, absolutely not. Nor should they. God, I hope not. Or certainly. Bryce Hall, like, that 50-50 ball that the, like, random receiver pulled in out of his ass. Yeah. Like, it's got to happen sometime.
Before we move on, I mean, you know, there's so many of those plays that we could rattle off pretty easily, despite trying.
Everyone just like turned it off.
Put it in the back of your mind, or a week or so. But
fast forward 3 minutes if you don't want to relive this. I'm just kidding.
I think the most reasonable ire obviously can be attributed to the coaching, because we don't like, at least on this podcast, we don't like yelling about or at amateur student athletes, but we have on occasion yelled at or about coaches, and the biggest example of that is obviously the conservative play calling with a game almost in hand.
Yeah.
According to win probability graphs, statistically in hand, twice, basically. You know, I play a lot of video game football, and it's always been in those situations, get a first down by running your normal shit and just trust that you're not going to majorly screw up by running your normal stuff. And
I just can't
see a reason to be so conservative. I don't mean don't run the ball, but it wasn't just running the ball. It was slow, patient, careful protecting for a yard and falling down, because all that matters is bleeding the clock. And clearly we see that's not exactly all that matters.
Yeah.
Those two situations there in the late. I think everybody knows what we're talking about, but mainly after recovering interception in Tech's red zone.
And I wonder, because absolutely there's no way to disagree with that. But I do think there's two things that I think can be said. And one is offensive coordinator or play caller is the easiest position to rail later. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
looking at hindsight is never particularly kind to offensive coordinators or whomever is calling the plays. Unless they win, which we clearly forget the majority of wins we had. Anyway, whatever. But the other part is playing that line.
So it has been something maybe that the team's not used to necessarily, but it is something they've experienced this year. And it's something that we were criticizing after the multiple games this year, you know. Yeah. So it's not like a new occurrence. It's not like something they haven't planned for, you know.
Sure. And I don't mean to excuse it as like, well, we've never done it before. I mean more in the sense of like, and that's a players and coaches thing. So like calling it and executing those runs and not getting in your head about like, oh my God, we have the game in hand. Like, I just need to get a first down and like not being able to do it. But also that I can't imagine, maybe it's just me being overly sensitive, but what it would be like to try and play call where you're being conservative enough that you're not risking anything, but also that you're getting the job done, right? So say he calls something and it's a slant and he throws a pick six, then he's getting reamed for being too aggressive with X amount of time left on the clock. You don't want that either. So like playing that fine line is definitely something I don't envy, but he also makes millions of dollars to do that. So, so it is something that's like, I am not on the, I don't know. I have a hard time calling for someone to get fired. I will never ever tweet, like, unless you're like covering up domestic abuse or like for just doing your job and not being
left there. Because it's so prevalent in the hiring.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, did I say that Urban Meyer should get fired or that DJ Durkin should get fired? Sure. Absolutely. But someone who is, you know, just not doing it quite as well as we want, to the extent where it's, I don't know. That's where I have a little bit more of a, I don't know. I don't have the hatred for Coach and I that some others might. And I do understand why people get frustrated, but I also think that it's a position and a person that's received absolutely almost zero praise for some outstanding play calling this year compared to a lot of anger on some questionable calls.
Yeah, I it's an easy horse to beat over and over. You know what I mean? Like it sounds like the first thing to be blamed when the team loses. I think the truth as to why is probably somewhere in the middle, right? Like it's because things are going wrong in the play calling, and so it is an easy thing to complain. Is it something that needs to take away all the focus from execution, we're not even talking about the defense that's the strength and of this team and didn't play all that well for the entirety of this game. Now, again, I bring up the play calling because it seems to be the easiest answer. And I think it's the easiest answer besides bad luck.
Which there was a ton of. You're right. Yeah. I think we're on the same page, and
we'd be remiss not to talk about it because it's definitely
absolutely. But in more positive things, they did finish 7-5. That did lead to them being selected by the Belk Bowl, which I think is a really nice step for this team. They're playing a South Carolina team that's 7-5, didn't really have any outstanding wins, but no bad losses, and they're star wide receiver has declared for the draft, so he's not playing. So that's a nice, like, okay. So I think this is something like hopefully fans will go. That's where I get really frustrated or annoyed, where it's like they don't deserve my support. Like, this is when they need your support. Like, I understand both sides kind of, but like I no, that's a lie. I don't understand the I just don't, and I never have, where it's like, they start playing better, they get my money. Like,
I'd be happy to elaborate on that. I mean, I know what you mean by I understand both sides. This is how I feel. And like, yeah, I invest plenty of time and energy and money into this program.
Yeah, exactly.
And so do all these other fans. And I get getting frustrated. And it again, it's that parallel to the basketball team where if our line for what is getting over the hump for UVA football is right now beating the Hokies and contending in the ACC Coastal. Well, we're contending in the Coastal, but that Hokie streak still sticks out. And for UVA, it's like championship level sustained success, which they've proven they can do. I mean, they only lost 3 games last year, but they haven't made a Final Four, and they've gotten upset in March or just notably lost in the NCAA tournament. That's that line for that team. And when you don't see it happen over and over again, you're going to get frustrated with your investment. I think the frustration with the football team is a little more warranted for a few reasons, in that they have been down for so long as a program. There is only so much patience in terms of the money you are going to spend. And to I don't mean forsaking fandom. I don't mean not following. Sure, I literally mean the money invested into attending these games. And bowl games are even another thing. It's short travel. It's lodging. It's something a lot of people, make as an investment because they are good fans. And if they don't, because of financial reasons, obviously explainable. And if they choose to make it financial reasons because they're tired of the mediocrity, who are we to get upset about that?
I'm not even talking about the people who don't want to spend money. I'm talking about the, that were planning on going, had, stuff, that was all set. And
I
now,
you.
No, they don't deserve my, I'm not going now. And I do understand the over frustration with it. But it's just I don't know. They're college kids. Go cheer.
I think we're talking around the same type of thing. Probably, again, none of us tend to really take it out here on this podcast or this blog on specific players, other than jokes about Jax Hall, maybe.
Which, set aside some time.
Don't you yell at me about Jax Hall. I'd never say bad stuff.
Oh, it's not. I need
not
to.
Not because I don't want to get yelled at by you. It's because I like Jax Hall.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm so excited to talk about Jax Hall.
I guess we know. I mean, we might as well get into basketball. I think we've circled the drain enough on really our thoughts about.
Yeah, long story short, going in the right direction.
Yeah.
When you pull back 20,000 foot view, this was. It's even tough to say successful season. It's successful in some marks, but that is just going to be this heartbreaking blemish at the end of the season. And I'm trying not to let that affect how I look at Juan Thornhill's career, how I look at Jordan Ellis's career, how I look at Olamide. These are really good players that have taken this team from a dumpster fire and bought into what Coach Mendenhall is doing. Uh-huh. And made it their own, and it's showing clear progress. So that's what I try and pull away and take away from this season.
Yeah.
Not that, and like we said, heartbreaking is the only thing that I can really, heartbreaking or devastating are the only two words I can really come up with to talk about the Tech game.
I know what you mean.
It's not even angry or disappointed. It's just heartbreaking. When they took the lead, I actually got choked. When Virginia took the lead, I got a little choked up. I was like, holy shit, is this going to happen?
And we haven't even said Joe Reed's name yet.
Bless his heart. Good Lord.
There's reasons for optimism to continue.
Yeah.
I think we all know that's true, whether you're beyond frustrated. You wouldn't be listening to this podcast if that's the case. Yeah. If you give it up on the team. So let's talk about basketball. Are the only undefeated team in the ACC. They've gone into hostile territory and beat an old rival Maryland, we get to it in a second. Maryland looks pretty decent, but the Wisconsin game is another ranked win against a all those adjectives that like to be thrown around about scrappy, gym rat, hard,
oh, gritty, coach's son of a team,
but it, a team that is similar to UVA, particularly in how they approach defense and possessions and things like that. And I don't mean to speak for everyone, but watching that game against Wisconsin, it was never in doubt. The score never got stretched too much, you know, to blowout territory. And that this happens a lot in UVA wins. They were obviously the better team and going to walk away beating that Wisconsin team, regardless of how many points Hap scored. So just nice to see that they're taking care of business pretty substantially well, and seeing the parts and reasons that differentiate this year's team and last year.
I just coming away, obviously in these preseason tournaments, you have to play, well, at any point you have to play whoever's in front of you. But at these preseason tournaments, you don't necessarily know who that's going to be. And there was a little bit of a like, oh, shucks, when Butler was upset by Dayton, because Butler is on paper. More name brand and a better SOS type game. But Dayton was a tough team. Like, they're still just inside 100. They played really well.
I was impressed with them.
Absolutely, and it was a really physical game. So it was nice to see when you're playing three games in 3 days like that, that the guys were able to like go out there and handle that, and then come out the next day and do what they did against Wisconsin, which is going to shape up to be a really nice resume win. Because there's a lot of talk about like a lot of angry talk about the strength of schedule, and he's scratching.
Play the drums.
Yeah, but angry when you look talk at it,
about the strength of schedule.
So I get like you don't want to see too like Coppin State's not good. I think that was part of like they were required to play them as part of the Battle for Atlantis, like site. Like you play a game at home for what? That's what at least I read somewhere. I think I saw. But obviously Morgan State, like there wasn't much choice in playing like a 351 out of 353. And normally any of these top 5, 10, 25 teams are going to play a 300 plus KenPom team as part, like, that's just how it goes.
Yeah. And then who's angry? You're saying UVA fans are angry.
I'm not angry, but like disappointed and like judging of the strength of schedule. When you schedule these things, like that's what people need to keep in mind. Like VCU, when these were scheduled, you know, 2-3 years ago with Shaka, was a different, or they rescheduled it after Shaka left, like, you know, adding to it.
Playing VCU every year, no matter how good.
I agree.
Unless they become some doormat.
They scheduled South Carolina right after South Carolina came off the Final Four. Like, so when you look at this, like the strength of schedule, and it is weaker this year than last. There's no real marquee matchup like they had with West Virginia last year, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like they're still taking care of business. You can't really tell what the team looks like. And I was like, I got a pretty good feeling that DeAndre Hunter's pretty damn good. And I would trust Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy with anything. So
I think Marshall is a, you know, a team that made the tournament. William and Mary looks a lot better this year. So The remaining out-of-state games are definitely more enticing than the non-ranked teams we played so far. I mean, you already named them, VCU, South Carolina, Marshall. But the ACC schedule is brutal, too.
Yeah, so why not get yourself some dubs? That's what the out-of-conference is for.
Duke twice.
Yeah.
Louisville, it looks pretty decent, actually, twice. Obviously,
Heck twice,
and they're good.
Notre Dame is twice, too. They're struggling a little bit, but you know how Bray is. He's a good coach. He's going to, like, Fluger's going to end up shooting 60% from three in the game.
They don't get Wake twice, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They're going to play enough good teams that I don't think anyone's going
to
be.
The only people that need to, like, load up their non-con is, like, Gonzaga and Nevada.
Took care of business against Wisconsin and Maryland, they have those out-of-conference games. Like you were saying, that's a marquee thing for Wisconsin because they're supposed to get done, and Maryland might contend for the Big Ten title. So I can see if they had slipped up in those, then you're going, oh gosh, if they only finish, you know, pretty good in the ACC, they're going to get dinged because they lost their
role. Yeah, exactly. But looking back at the Wisconsin game and the Maryland game, back-to-back games, back-to-back games against really tough big men and two guys or types of guys that are very different. So you have Ethan Happ, mm-hmm. who's more of a finesse finisher, and then you have Bruno Fernando, who's just a bruiser, like a big dude for Maryland. And so what they did against Happ, and I, you know, toot my own horn here, before when I did the Q&A with our Wisconsin site, Bucky's fifth quarter, I was like, you know, I think they're going to just kind of let Jack go one-on-one with Happ, make Happ work for his. He's going to get his, probably get like 20 points, but Virginia is going to win like by 7. And that's exactly, or like I had him by 8 points, like that. And that's exactly what happened. Uh-huh. But with having Jack play so tough on Happ, all of the other four guys on the court for Virginia made life miserable for the guys they were guarding. So I think the rest of the team went 34% from the field and Happ was 11 for 19 or whatever. Uh-huh. So I just go back to Demetric Trice. Oh my God, I could talk for like an hour alone on what Kihei Clark has brought to the dynamic nature of the offense by starting him. Tony's a genius. But Demetric Trice, the game before, went 7 for 8 from three. He only took 2 against Virginia and he missed both of them. He had 5 points. Uh-huh. And he was one that I was really concerned about because Happ's a good passer. You double him, he passes it out. Those guys hit open shots. But because they went with Jack going one-on-one, he wasn't able – he didn't have to dish out because uh-huh. he would just take his time and, like, back down the post. And then the other guys were marked so heavily and the other defenders stayed with their guys so well that they got no real traction. So I just thought that was such an impressive performance by Jack and the rest of the defense for what they did against Happ and Wisconsin. I mean, they're up to 13 in KenPom, number 12 in the poll. Like, that's a good win. Like,
Wisconsin is.
Yeah. You take that and you take that to the bank. Yeah. Like,
well, and road win in College Park.
Oh, hell yeah.
Any win on the road, a true road game, is huge, particularly against a name brand team. And Maryland looks good. Jalen Smith, is that the freshman's name? He looks really good. I mean,
He's tough.
Not like I was worried about him taking over the game, but as a player, I think he is going to be even more exciting to watch for them.
And that was a huge – the atmosphere there for them to go on the road and stay calm. Not just calm, but, like, completely unbothered. And at no point did they get rattled. Again, Kihei Clark gets a start on the road as a freshman. They were brutal. And normal, someone asked me the other day before the Morgan State game, one of the photographers was like, oh, did you go to that game? Like, how was the crowd? And I was like, you know, it was, as far as Maryland crowds go, it was like relatively tame. but I was also at the one where they chanted like no means no at Anthony Gill at the free throw line after the Rolling Stone article came out. So as far as that goes, it wasn't bad, but like there was still the like, look, you, Ty Jerome, like, you suck, like, pointed, like, you know, just ongoing.
They're super clever.
Oh, yeah, so creative. but the guys just handled business. Like, they went in and, like...
They handled a run. They, you know, Maryland was probably due to make a run. And they did, and who's
handled a run, they handled the refs, they handled... Maryland shooting out of their ass in the last 5 minutes of the game were like, they could not, the number of threes, I was like, how did that go in? Like, they made like one in the first half. So it was just like, the whole thing was just so impressive. And it, you look at what they did and it was just the Jack Salt game. Like, he was everywhere. He did everything. And again, that was so well prepared by Coach Bennett because they knew that Fernando and Smith were shot blockers so that those offensive rebounding opportunities would be there. So Jack crashed the glass where he normally didn't crash the glass. Mm-hmm. So it's just the little things that they're doing. And
coaching decision.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. And it's just they read everything the right way, and he used his timeouts brilliantly. He used the bench when they couldn't get stops in the first half. Like, they brought in that defensive lineup with Key and Marco Anthony.
It was nice to see Marco get out there.
Yeah, and he did great, and they finally got a few stops in a row and got some offense going. And above all of that, they show that they can win a game with offense. Maryland could not miss at times, and make it that way you will. Like, they're going to shore up the 2-point defense more. I'm not concerned about that. But this team can make shots and make big shots. And it's not just DeAndre.
Their free throw defense was pretty good too.
Yeah, also true. Also true.
Some points on the line.
But where they lost things with Isaiah, obviously, I think Jack has more than shown, this is my soapbox, he's doing a lot of those little things, even against Morgan State last night, diving for the ball, tipping out the offensive rebounds, tipping steals. Well, bless his heart, he can't even corral the loose balls that end up at his feet because it's just too far.
I mean, I'm sure he doesn't listen to this. He looks like a newborn giraffe.
No,
trying to walk for the first time. Not all the time, but when he was trying to get the ball.
Yes. Where are my feet? How are they connected to my body? I can't even imagine what it's like to be 7'1". But yeah, so Jack's out there diving, throwing the ball forward. He dribbled behind his back in the open court and then made two free throws. This is exactly why I've been. And do I think Jack's going to score 12 points every game? No, obviously not. If he can do six, like he did against, 6 to 8 here, almost every time, that's outstanding. That's great. That's what we're getting from Isaiah. But what he brings, I'm not people will say, well, you're so biased, whatever. I'm not anti-playing Diakite and Huff. Sure. I just think I understand that there's benefits that both of those styles of big men bring to our team. Mm-hmm. So, I was actually shot last night. Jay actually pulled off a screen that someone ran into. I was like, oh my God, look at that. Because he's just, he's longer and leaner. But my new favorite play is they've pulled Jack out to the top a lot more. And he's helping distribute, and he just sets those little screens right there. Well, he'll get it from Kyle. Kyle cuts back, and then he literally just tosses it foot behind him, and he just shoots over Jack.
Times a game, just a little quick.
Top. It's beautiful, and I want everyone. Just my last little thing. Everyone, chill out on Momedy a little bit. I want him to do more stuff too, but this isn't this is a. He plays with so much emotion and so much in his head stuff that he's trying so hard at all times to make things happen that I think he kind of messes up some stuff. And I've seen stuff where it's he's a burnout. That's oh, it's not going to happen. I'm no, that's not the case. Don't say that. So everyone just chill out and he'll be fine. I'm not too worried about him. He's a good kid.
I'm fine with Momedy.
anyway, 8-0, woo!
I like seeing more Marco in these games. I'm curious where Marco's going to fit in to the rotation in ACC play, because I think it's going to be telling about his spot in the rotation next year.
Absolutely.
Jack and probably Hunter, and hopefully not another guard.
Every time there's a draft thing out and Ty's not in it, I'm like, oh my God.
We'll see.
But then I'm like, oh, I feel bad because I want him to get his paper.
Casey Morsell seems legit coming in. He's a big time player. We'll be here next year. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Marco gets play when Bennett starts to really tighten up the rotation.
Yeah.
Same for Jay Huff. I think we know at great length. We've talked about Huff and know why he's in there sometimes and not all. He's going to have to play some more when inevitable foul trouble comes through, and I think that's something that we can see when Huff has been getting these minutes early on this season, and not just in mop-up time and not just against Lithert. Competition necessarily.
I think you're right with the rotation, because there were some comments about it last night from Coach Bennett where it's what happens with there are going to be times where Jay Huff is going to have games where he can make an impact, I think, and there's going to be times where Cody Statman coming in, that was a big game for him last night. It was good to see him get some stuff done. And then you look at I do think there's a place for Marco as a really vital role player, like we talked about already with his defense. That was no small moment that he came in, and there's obviously there's going to be better offensive teams that Virginia's going to face than Maryland, but Maryland was no slouch, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's built, in talking to him, like, he's so similar to Brogdon's frame and build, and like how helpful that is on defense can't be understated. So I think you look at those eight or so, starting five,
hopefully we'll be able to see more. I mean, VCU and South Carolina aren't like, you know, cupcakes like State is. Oof, that team.
Yeah.
So bad. Sorry to all the Morgan State fans listening, but
they're bad. Angrily just closing their laptops so right bad. Now. Son of a
And four, as we've been saying, four more games till ACC plays. So,
holy shit, it's going so fast.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll be back to talk. VC is the next one in a few days, and we'll get more in-depth into previewing the Belk Bowl. Belk Bowl is the best bowl. We can talk about that in the coming days. But, until then, for Caroline and the rest of the blog, go Hoops.